Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
Devin, what do you got for us today?
The slander of some people is as great a recommendation as the praise of others. That's it. Short and sweet.
Yeah. Man, that's a good, I like that one. And the short quotes are easy for me to like grasp and think about. When you got those long ones, I'm like trying to pull it all in and have something right to say about it. If you guys don't know, Devin does not tell me what these quotes are before we record, so it's just on the fly. But I like that the slander of some people is just as good as the praise of others. Is that what it is?
Yeah, the great of a recommendation. Because I was thinking of recommendation quotes, because we're going to go through some of that today. Just super recommendation special. All types of stuff. We just wanted to think about what we like and what we could put good, positive, awesome things out there into the universe.
Right.
But yeah, I like that. And I guess, I don't know, it's not like we're getting slandered, but people all deal with that, you know?
Right. And I guess what is it? It's like any advertisement is good advertisement. What's that saying? But yeah, that's like, you know, if you're getting slandered, right, it's still people talking about you.
Right.
Right. So, and I know you're all about that because you love giving those like false recommendations. You're like, this is a recommendation, but I'm going to complain about this.
I do have complaints. If we want, I can do anti-recommendations tonight.
Yeah,
this week.
We'll just go back and forth. I'll do recommendations, and then you slander people. Just shitting on people all episode. This is what grind my gears.
I've got a bunch.
What was that? We did the Festivus special with our brothers. And we're all like, Drew and Derek and I were like, yeah, we don't really have many. And you're like, I don't know. You're like, I've got plenty.
Oh, I'm loaded. Here we go.
Of
it all pisses me off. I guess I wasn't gonna get into it, but I can real quick about like things that piss you off. What's the Bill Maher?
Yeah,
he has his show on HBO.
And he's the same one. Is that Bill Maher? Is he the one from Mandalorian?
Is that Bill Maher? No. That's Bill Burr.
Bill Burr. Okay. Yeah, that's close enough. Come on, the name. I don't know.
Yeah, but Bill Maher's the political pundit
like,
guy.
No.
Well, one's a comedian. I guess Bill Maher's a comedian, but
all right.
Oh no, he just said like I said, I don't always like him. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not. But whatever. But he comes up with some pretty good points, and one was if he hears "We're all in it together" one more time, he can't stand it anymore. And then his first point was, you say we're all in it together, but half the country is sitting at home in their PJs ordering food, and the other half is delivering it.
The whole, it's everyone's revolved around food.
Yeah.
That's the part of our economy that has thrived.
Right.
The order in capability of food and everything else. That's why Amazon is killing it like it is. I will tell you though, but you know, just having to use more online ordering, like I've gotten good at it. It's very easy to buy things online. It's like a little too easy sometimes.
Oh yeah.
Like I kind of need this. Look, it's right there at my fingertip. Bye. And then it's on my doorstep, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I really need that. Can I send this back easily? No, now I got to go and find a package and put it back in the mail. sucks.
That's how they get you. Yeah, I was driving today. I was that's one of the things that was pissing me off. It was all these commercials like, we know you care about your family more than ever, and we want you to know we're here for you. And then at the end of the commercial, they try to sell you a new roof.
Yeah, right.
You're like, what? Stop. You're already saying it's a tough time and no one has money. Don't you want to protect your home? It's more important now than ever.
I know. Yeah, that was, man, that it did really get on my nerves. Like, everyone who was, I don't want to call it, like, jumping on the COVID bandwagon, but, like, everybody is playing at your emotions in this situation. And it was like, shut up. Like, don't tell me about how you're on board with, you know, we're all together in this. Like, I don't care about that. Just tell me about your product. You know?
Like,
don't just jump on board and try to seem like you've always been this way. You know, it's like, and, you know, I'm like a huge, huge proponent for, equality, but I mean, everyone who's like jumping on the like bandwagon of the Black Lives Matter, I feel like so many people are like trying to take advantage of that in different ways.
Oh,
to,
well,
make their companies seem really good. I'm like what? None of this matters. Like, you are a company that is here for people. We're all people. Like, you don't have to try to jump on this bandwagon to make some of us feel better about it. Like, oh, it's so annoying.
Yeah. Well, it's whatever movement comes through, right? Whatever, movement of the moment, and not to say some of them don't have value, but when Adidas, like, we care about protecting women, hashtag Me Too Adidas, like, what?
Right.
You're selling shoes, like.
Right, exactly.
I don't care. If you feel so bad about it, why don't you hire some CEOs that are women? Like,
right,
don't come at us with some, try to make us feel bad and buy your expensive shoes.
Right. Or just donate money to the cause. Like, you know, you don't have to tell any about it, just, and maybe they are, you know, but still, it's like, I know everyone is just bandwagon. Everyone's like, oh, let me jump on this bandwagon. I'm sure, you know, and that's their marketing department. It's their marketing department. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, we got to do this. You know, this is what's going to make us look good. And
because
it works.
That's the
sad thing.
Maybe it does, but I think it's just, they don't want to be the odd man out.
Right.
Then you're going to get some Twitter mob saying, why isn't blah, blah, blah talking about this?
Right. Yeah.
Do you hate this and that? Like, no, we sell shoes.
Right.
And we're trying to make shoes.
Everyone's money is green.
Right. I don't care who buys it.
Right. Exactly. Of course, you know, we want anyone to buy it. We're a company that is designed to make money.
Right.
Like, that's what companies do. They make money, and they, like, Your job isn't there to make everyone happy. It's there to make money and to sell a product that people need.
Right. Yeah, it's like,
and that's what grinds my gears.
That's right. And working for sports teams, they all have so many messages. They don't care, for one. I've been behind the scenes. They really don't care about anything that you hear them say they do, because because every time they do anything quote unquote good, they're followed with a camera crew.
Right.
And they put posts about it. Like, a sports team will never, ever do anything out in the community without a camera crew, without someone there, without, like, a whole crew of people there to make sure it's seen. They don't care. They do all these community things, but there's always, like, a video on Facebook.
Right.
Like, see this amazing blah, blah, blah that we did. They don't do things behind the scenes.
Right. I mean, they're in a business to make money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the more they can be out there in the world, the more they're seen, the more money they're making.
Right. And it's always, I appreciate that you're doing these things, but we know it's bullshit.
Right.
And I don't really care that it's bullshit. If you're giving money, you're giving money. Like, cool. But don't try to make it as if you're doing it for any other reason.
Right.
Like, if they just said, hey, we want to do some donations because we need tax write-offs and we like your organization. That's it. Like,
right.
Good enough.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'd appreciate that.
It's going to benefit everybody. That's fine. You know, we understand. No one's dumb. Like, people understand if you're doing huge donations, you're getting huge tax write-offs.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, everything we're talking about is the, like, the stereotype. Of course, there's the exceptions. We know that. We're not, like, you know, completely naive. There's definitely good people in the world, but yeah, I know what you mean.
But anyway, I don't know how. But maybe it's just a crazy day for me. We talked about that before. We don't have to go into that. But I have more negative things than positive things to talk about. But we can move on.
But, you know, like we said, you know, that's the whole thing. Us sitting here complaining for a few minutes about some of these things. Now these things are in people's ears.
That's true.
And now people are thinking about Adidas. You know, like, oh, I remember Adidas. These are great. Maybe I'll go buy a pair of Adidas. You know, someone's like, oh, I need to order in some food.
You know? Yeah, oh, I am hungry.
Yeah, right.
Let me get some person who lost their job. Now they have to make half of it on Uber Eats.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway. Yeah. Well, we can get into what we've been up to, because that's always fun. We did we posted the Kukri video last Sunday, and that's doing really well. That's fun.
Yeah.
And also going back to your quote, you know, like all of us, anyone who makes anything on YouTube or puts anything out in the world, you know, you have to deal with the trolls and the people who are putting in the comments, the ones you feel like you have to reply to because you're trying to stick up for yourself, and it's like, that's so tough.
Yeah.
I always just try to do it in a way that's I don't know, put a positive spin, but like, you know, like you said, I try to answer as many of the positive, you know, the thank yous and the positive comments and stuff as much as I can do them too. But then, you know, also try to respond to some of the negative comments to see if they, you know, to turn it around a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the we always come back. And it's funny. I do a quote about slander, and we start out just slandering people.
So, yeah, right.
yeah, I don't know. We get those people, and I really feel like you just shouldn't respond to them,
right?
Because you're gonna give them a longer response than you will someone who says,
right.
I mean, you can only say so much when someone says, "Hey, we love it. Great, thanks." And that's we love those messages, but. Yeah, you can only say, "Hey, thanks for watching." Like, you know, you can't. There's not much of response we can give.
And I try to, you know,
but
Go ahead.
I was gonna say. But then you feel like when we want to defend ourselves, which we always have the urge to do, because most of the trolls are idiots anyway. So there's a million ways to defend yourself. Their points aren't great,
right?
But it's not. Then you're gonna give them like a paragraph,
right?
And the other person, you're gonna give a few.
Yeah, a couple words or whatever. And I feel like, you know, and definitely I do that. I don't respond to the ones that are just straight up purely negative. I usually respond to the ones that are like asking a question, you know, but in kind of a possibly could, you know, I could have just taken it straight negative, but I'll try to answer in ways that, you know, spin it to a positive. So, you know, oftentimes, especially like with this video, we've gotten quite a few comments that are from people saying, like, why would you ruin, you know, this kookery? You know, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, why would you ruin this? And I just, every time I see a comment like that, all I can think of is Jimmy DiResta's baby voice. And he's like, oh, why would you ruin this? It's a really good kookery. If you bought this in the country, it would be worth $200. I'm just like,
But, yeah, that's why I feel like you ignore them like a little annoying person. Like, you don't even dignify them with a response.
Oh, it's so hard though. But yes, no, I agree. It's so hard though.
But yeah, people saying that you're ruining a brush axe.
Right.
A tool that no one uses, that there's probably a million in this country. Literally a million of them sitting. Like, it's not any specialty amazing thing. No one uses it anymore.
Right.
So it either sits there or gets thrown away.
Right.
So
and yeah, like there's no like brush axe junkies Facebook page.
Right.
You know, like, and the people who post on, you know, it's like when people are excited about it and they get something cool, like the one that we had, you know, that was the only reason why I kept it around as long as I did was because it was a Kelly, you know, Kelly True Temper.
Right.
But it still wasn't, you know, I was like, oh, you know, and I collect Kelly axes and things. So it had that allure to me as a Kelly collector, but
it wasn't
that.
Right. It wasn't the thing. It's like you saying, hey, I want these chairs. From I don't know a famous chair. Let's say Lazy Boy. You collect Lazy Boy chairs, and they also make a coffee table.
Right, exactly.
You don't really care about the coffee table. Like it's nice that it's a brand I like, but you know whatever.
Right.
They're known for their chairs.
And yeah, and maybe you do, right? Maybe you want that one coffee table that's from the specific time and a specific set. You know, you don't want all the coffee tables. You don't care. Like, you might want all the Lazy Boys because they're all cool, but you don't care about all the, you know, if there's a novelty of having that one, which again is the reason why I kept Kelly around. But if it were like a Kelly, you know, World's Finest or Registered Brush Axe, I would have kept it, you know, like, because that's, or right. a Black Raven. I don't think they made Black Raven Brush Axe. I hope they didn't, because what a waste of a good stamp. But you know what I mean? Like, if it's something like that,
you know what we should do?
It'd be different.
Or what would be, I would love it. You would hate it. If you ever get your hands on a Black Raven, you modify it into something else.
Oh.
You cut right through that stamp, and we show it on video, you throwing away the rest of it.
Oh.
Like, throwing it in the trash. And we're like, man, we made this really cool mod to it now. Now it looks halfway decent. Thanks for watching.
We made a pickaroon, you know, just cut into like a long skinny point.
We made an ice pick. Just keep grinding and grinding this, and they slowly see it in a time lapse grind away. Like, first thing I'm gonna do is smooth this edge, because we don't need this stamp.
Or yeah, like, do a mirror polish and just yeah. grind away the whole logo.
Yeah. Oh yes. Now we're talking. Man,
nah, yeah, that would get lots of views.
You're like, can you believe us?
Every once in a while, someone will come across, someone will pop up on Axe Junkies and make a joke about that and be like, you know, I found this really cool axe, but it's got this weird logo on it that's kind of half gone. I think I'm just going to grind it away and do like a mirror polish on it. And then everyone just responds with laughing, because everyone knows, like, no one's that dumb.
I don't know. I kind of want to do it now. If I have one, I don't know.
I like the idea. We have to think about the right thing, though. But it doesn't matter. Like, whatever it is, you're going to have somebody up in arms. Someone's like, oh, why would you do that?
We'd have some slander then. And it would be appropriate slander.
We'd lose all of our Axe Junkies, our audience, gone. Unsubscribe. Just lost 30,000 subscribers in one day.
It's like those videos where the people buy the brand new thing. Like, I don't know, PlayStation, whatever, PlayStation 5, and they just smash it next to the people's line. And they're just, it annoys me, but it's pretty great, too.
No, I agree.
That they just take it, the new iPhone or whatever, and they walk outside, smash it on the ground, and walk away. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind, like, for something new, you know, like something that you can get, but obviously when it's an antique, right, there's more to it than just the novelty of being able to get one of those things. But
right, and you would get more, it'd be so much anger, and it would be, it's kind of silly.
I know, sweaty just thinking about it.
It'd be so silly to get angry about someone, you know, cutting up an axe. Right. No matter how, you know, it's not an Egyptian artifact.
Right, exactly. It's not a cultural.
It's not some, it wasn't made 1,000 years ago.
Right.
But you would get so much heat as if it were, as we can tell, because we're getting it for a brush axe that no one wants or uses, and you can buy for $10. Like,
right. Yeah, like I said, there's something about it that, you know, drew me in ever since I saw my first brush axe, but it's got the axe handle. I think that's what it is. It's the axe handle.
Right.
It's like, ooh, that's an axe. It's not really an axe. It's kind of like when I see a pickaxe kind of in the corner of a thrift shop, and I'm like, oh, there it is. And I go over and I grab the handle, or I see the handle, and I'm like, oh, it's a handle. There's an axe there. And it's like, oh, it's a pickaxe. Oh, okay. But, you know, if I cut up a pickaxe, and I have the pickaxe lovers would be like, oh, why would you do that? My grandfather was a lineman, and he used pickaxes, and you ruined an antique. When somebody said a relic, I ruined a relic.
Oh yeah, calm down, Indiana Jones.
I know, right? I was like, really, the brush axe from the 80s is a relic? Give me a break. Someone was like, you know, this thing you could find, but you can find knives anywhere. That was one of the comments. You could, you know, you might find this in like a rural flea market for $200, but you know. But you could find knives anywhere. I was like, yeah.
How much did he say it was?
He said a couple hundred bucks I could find it, like a brush axe, like that brush axe at a rural flea market or something.
I found it for $10. Really?
So yeah, exactly.
$10 is the market value from where we're at.
That was, and his comment was kind of like, that was one of the ones that was kind of halfway between, it wasn't 100% just critical for being critical. It was kind of like a conversation, you know. It's like, I can't believe you did this, da, 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 whatever. And yeah, I was like, well, yeah. I was like, it's my axe, and I've had it sitting around for a while. I've considered it, and you know, I had those thoughts of not wanting to cut up something that was kind of cool, but you know, I'm also, you know, it didn't. I've never seen a brush axe for more than $20 anywhere.
Like, right.
Like, I don't know about a relic, but
yeah. But yeah. So we didn't, I guess we don't have to go into it way too much. But we did the our first full size 4K video.
Oh yeah,
which is the Kukri. It looks great.
Yeah,
but it has convinced me not to use MOV anymore because it was like, I don't know, 400 gigs worth of footage. Oh, and we just can't. I can't store it.
400 gigs.
Unless I get a huge upgrade the storage system way big time, but and the PC gigs. Was struggling trying to edit it. It just was so slow all around. Right. It looks great. And then we did, you know, the other options, MP4. So I did we shot that comparison, and I did them back to back, and I couldn't right. tell any difference by eye. So
you were using your like full size screen, your 50-inch,
yeah, like, TV, yeah, right? Yeah, I was really looking, and I mean, it is a smaller file, but it's just,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know,
it's not worth it. Even if I could see something tiny.
Right.
It wouldn't be worth the time and storage space to shoot everything in that. And I talked to a bunch of friends of mine in the who are
in the industry.
And they're that's kind of their all secret too. They don't shoot MOV unless it was a huge project.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the thing too. It's our videos aren't made to be watching in a theater. You know, like right. huge sound, and it's not that type of experience.
Right.
There's something different. It's the same reason why, you know, like the Woodwright shop, you know, they shot that all in one take almost every time. And it's like maybe two cameras, but it's not amazing quality. It's just, there's something different about when you're sitting in front of someone talking, there's a different audience, you know?
It's not a Netflix documentary.
Right.
It's not going to be totally slick because we don't have a crew of 10 people.
Right.
It's just me and you, but we will make it look as good as we can and make it sound good with, you know, you just mic someone up close to their mouth and you're set. But anyway, it's out. I'm happy with it.
We've gotten some good response from some of our friends and stuff. You know,
I was
not necessarily they really like the image. So.
Sick of it by the time I was done with it. Did I say that last week? What happened? Oh no, I didn't.
No.
Yeah, I can't. I just with the new the. It takes, I mean, some people say it's like, it takes them all day to upload one, like 1080 right. video, but it usually doesn't for me. So a 7-hour upload to YouTube is just terrible. And I'd waited all day and night for one. Seven and then hours. Like late night, I was watching it like 1 a.m. the night before we were supposed to put it out. And then about 22 minutes in, and you can't look away, or at least I don't.
Right.
Like, because you got to check that there's not. Like there'll be drop frames or there'll be some type of pixelation. That's what happens, or at least for me, that's what happens on YouTube. Those are the things I catch.
Right.
So you really have to pay attention. You can't be playing on your phone and just listen to it.
Right.
So I was like 24 minutes into it, and I saw a flash of a weird pixelation like around your stomach, and then it like shot off, you know, weird squares and stuff. So I was like, oh, my heart just dropped, you know, my stomach drops. And then I roll back. Sometimes it's the internet, you know. I was hoping it was that, but then I played like 3 times in a row, the same spot. I was like, I got to do it all and then wake up early in the morning and watch it again. And
why would it do that, I wonder? Is it just something in the upload or whatever?
Yeah, there's just, it's a glitch, I guess, in the upload. It's happened before.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be on my end, the way I'm, even though I've gone through and, you know, looked at the way people upload
right
in the best file formats, but I think it just takes so long
right
that there's room for something to go wrong.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But luckily the second time it didn't, and it looked fine. Watch the whole thing. It's clean now, but
yeah. Yeah, no, it looks great, and I definitely noticed it. You know, I will often not really notice the quality, you know, because I'm watching it on my phone 99% of the time, maybe even 99.9% of the time. But I definitely noticed the quality. There were some times where there was close ups and something, and everything in the screen was super clean, and then everything in the background was super clean too. I was like, ooh, that looks really nice. You know, sometimes I'll notice it, but it doesn't bother me because it's not what I'm looking for. You know, they'll be like, just where the quality is not as, I can see the difference between that and a movie, right? You know, there's a quality difference, but there were definitely a few times where I noticed it was super clean. I was like, oh man, that's nice.
Yeah.
It looks cool.
So yeah, thanks again to all the Patreon people for supporting us, because all of that money went towards that camera and that gear for the camera.
Heck yeah. Oh man, that was awesome. What a great resource and what a great way for people to, you know, I don't know, people who support the channel, we always say that we're putting all that right back into the channel, and literally that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So we just finished up last night. We finished up another video. We're kicking butt. We'll do a quick one after our longer one. We're making a set of marking knives for woodworking out of metal files.
Yeah.
So yeah, those turned out really good, really clean. I wasn't exactly sure how we were going to grind the bevels for those. And I kind of had an idea in my head, and I was thinking a bevel jig, or, you know, how to set it up some way so that I could put that kind of 20-degree bevel on. But they're a double, it's like a spear point marking knife. So it has, so you can cut either on the left or the right with the back of it is flat and the bevels are just ground on the front. Hmm. And, I was trying to figure it out, you know, a couple days in a row before we did that video, and I think may have even been the first day that we were filming or down there getting things ready. And I kind of realized that with the grinder that I had, the 2x72 grinder, the Revolution from Housemade, that has, and I think, you know, I think this is something that a lot of grinders do have, but it's something I didn't really think about, but it has the tilting work rest and then also the tilting platen. So, right. Both the tap platen and the work rest can tilt. So, you know, the work rest, I was able to tilt back to 45 degrees and then tilt the platen forward, however many degrees, to be able to get that 20 degree or whatever the opposite of that, you know, the 110 degree bevel on the outside and then just be able to keep my, the blade flat on the platen and run it up against and get those really clean bevels, which are, you know, I think the biggest thing for me always with bevels is how parallel the edge of the knife and the top of the bevel are, and being able to do that and have it perfect, they would stay really clean and straight. So,
yeah, no, they look great. You made one for me with little thumb holding bits.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, kept trying to think out what do I call these?
You called them like circle thumb,
half circle thumb. Things.
I don't think you ever came up with a good one. So I'll pick the best one. I'll just edit my voice into it.
Circle thumbs. Thumb holders.
Thanks for watching there, circle thumbs.
Yeah, I know. I like, and I'll honestly say that I really like the look of them afterward. You know, I wasn't sure just from the drawing. I wasn't sure if I'd like it. That's why we made the two variations, the one that's just simple, the one that I'm having, and then the one that yours has those on either side. You guys will see that in the video. But yeah, no, they're both great, and they both feel really good. So,
yeah, no, they're very, very cool, very slick, and it's always nice to have the all the that file stuff left on those blades. If people decide not to grind them all off, obviously you ground it smooth on the one side, but
right, yeah,
or pretty much, and then but on the other flat, still has the file markings and the. Yeah. What was the print? What was the stamp?
The Nicholson. Yeah, we had like the Nicholson stamp on it.
Nicholson USA Black Diamond or something,
yep,
right?
Black Diamond, yep. And on the back it says Mill Bastard.
Old Bastard.
Old Mill Bastard. Yeah, and then, you know, using the little nub where the tang usually comes out, kind of cutting that off, but then using that as a lanyard hole spot. So put some leather lanyards on that, and yeah.
Really we cool. have... been having fun destroying more artifacts this week.
I was thinking about that as I was grinding. I'm like, oh, here we go. Here come the artifact comments. Now, we've made knives out of files before, and I think that's, you know, obviously files are, even a brand new Nicholson file is like $12. You can get vintage ones that haven't been used and pay more money for them. But every one that I'm using are from, you know, just rusty scraps that I buy from yard sales for $1 or $2 or $0.50 or whatever here or there. So, the other thing that's kind of cool about them is that they became magnetized. I don't know exactly how, but like I had to set them down together after we had shaped and did all the profiling. We were ready to start the grinding the bevels. So between the 2 days of filming, and I went down to the shop earlier in the day before we started filming yesterday and picked them up, and they both had oil on them because I'd oiled them the night before after we had done it, and I wiped off the oil. But when I picked them up, they were kind of stuck together, and I assumed it was the oil that was holding them together in the real flat surfaces. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up like cleaning them and kind of putting them back together, and I realized that they were sticking together. Like they were magnetized. So I was like, that's so cool. I kept like holding them up, you know, hold one there. You know, it wasn't such a strong magnet where you could kind of take just one and stick it to something, but if I put both of them together and laid them on top, you know, flat, and I held them up that way, like one above the other, they hold together. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. And that's we asked in the video if anyone knew why it.
Yeah.
The scientific or ways that why it got remagnetized because of the heat or whatever. But that's one of those things. Hopefully, we comments on because we actually want to know.
Yeah.
I don't know what they would like. Fishing for comments, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, whatever. Yeah. If people want to chat with you.
Comments below. Yeah, right.
But it's like a lot of the big guys, they're not going to, they don't really care what you think about this. Like,
right.
Hey, what do you think? Comment down below. Like, they just want the comments for the algorithm. And that's fine. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And everyone in the YouTube chat will talk to each other then, which is still a nice thing.
Yeah.
But I was really happy with the kukri, all the comments we got when you asked about what the choil was for. And we got so many different ones. It was really interesting. And then, there's like, it's the blood, or it has to, you have to prick your finger every time you sheathe it if it didn't draw blood. There's these, maybe there's these religious
connotations or whatever, like based off of, like it's a image of Shiva or something. There's like, it was crazy, all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, representative of cows, representative
like the hoof
anatomy, like there's like just tons of stuff.
That then, was apparently we struck a chord. Like we didn't really know.
Yeah.
And
I like it. There's one person that was like, there's this that could be said that it was, and there's this that it could be said that it was. But honestly, like they did the research and no one really knows. So no one knows. there's no definitive reason. Like I like how it was like a definitive statement that there's no definitive statement. Like, but no one knows.
Oh, right.
That's great.
It's we stumbled on the perfect question.
Yeah. Right. And but it really just
we really did want to know. We weren't sure.
Right. Yeah. Because I was looking it up and I was like, okay. I kind of drew what it was and I said, do you have this kind of this, or you even you said it, like there's kind of like funky choil.
Yeah. I said there's because you were drawing. Yeah, you were drawing a single choil.
Right.
I said, do you want to do that funky choil on the bottom? You're like, I can't really picture it. And then I think I pulled up a picture.
Yeah, and I knew it was kind of like almost like the Wu-Tang symbol, like a rounded W with a point in the middle. Yeah. You know, I was like, I kind of thought it was something like that. And and you were like, I was like, I don't know. I don't really want to do that. But then, no, it was good. And we just ended up doing a version of it, like a double V choil, which works well and is, you know, it nods to the original choil.
Right.
But that was great. Tons of good comments on that.
The double choil originated from Old Dirty Bastard on Wu-Tang back in the early 90s.
Double choil. Good old ODB.
ODB. All right.
we finished the marking knife video, which was really fun because, you know, just grinding files. Man, I will tell you that... grinding bevels on a file that you're trying to keep cool is really annoying because the file is it's heat treated, right? It's really hard. Obviously it's designed to cut other metals. It's gotta be really hard. And it's not ideal to do, you know, to grind on those because it really kills your belts and stuff. But if you can grind a bevel and not, and not overheat your blade, so you keep that hardness, then you don't have to do any heat treating. So right. if people are out there and they want to make a knife and they have, you know, they have the capability to grind the knife, but they don't have the capability to heat treat, then if you can take an old file and grind away what's not a knife and leave a knife behind without overheating it, then you have a hardened blade, which is kind of cool. But it's just really annoying how long it takes, because it's like literally as soon as, you know, and working on a bevel like that, that's, it's such a short bevel, maybe an inch and a half at the most on both sides. And the point gets really narrow. So I'm just grinding in every little time, everything that would be, you know, every time the bevel would start to dry, I'd have to like quench it, because you know, if it gets overheated at all, then I just ruin it. And then I got to heat treat it. So,
yeah. That's hence why I had time for some Instagram posts.
Right, yeah, that's great. Always pop up later. It's like, I'm like, look at my phone. I'm like, yeah, okay.
I see what it was.
Yeah, just hanging out. Yeah, I thought you were just behind me, you know, recording.
No, the camera was on the stand, you know, so.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Time lapse is Devin time. And Dustin, you're like, I drank a beer and you drank four.
I know, right? Exactly.
I was like, there was like three time lapses, man. I don't know what you want me to do.
I have been listening to music in my Isotunes headphones, which have been pretty sweet. But hopefully the Bluetooth doesn't mess up our camera. It shouldn't. But
well,
I guess when it's
for the time lapse, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's when I do it. And that's the thing, doing the past, if we're doing a time lapse, I'm like, oh, put on some music, you know, on the speakers. But grinding, I have to have the ear protection in anyway. So I have the headphones, Isotunes headphones in. And
I'll see what I do different with the 4K and the storage. But since I record a time lapse, not in time lapse mode, but in just normal rolling mode, just in case something happens, we'll catch it.
Right.
Right. Like, I could come out of the time lapse. If you shoot something, if it's a 20-minute time lapse, I shot 20 minutes worth of footage,
right?
And I just speed it up in Premiere,
right?
So if you did have stuff, something on the background, whatever, you know, Jimi Hendrix or something, then we wouldn't be able to use it because we get flagged and demonetized and whatever,
right? Yeah,
but anyway,
that was cool. That worked well, you know. And obviously, everything always takes longer than we think it's gonna. We'll get this done in one day. Like, okay, well, let's do it in 2 days. And then it was like, it did take us 2 days.
I think we could have done it in one day until you said, I'm thinking about, or I guess you always wanted to make two. I just didn't think about it.
Right, yeah.
And you were like, yeah, and then exactly. We have like the other one. I was like, oh no. This is not a 1 day shoot anymore.
Right. Yeah, because it took me just over an hour to grind the bevels on both of them. So, you know, that's what took the longest out of all the processes was grinding the bevels, and even that wasn't that long. But, you know, when we get together in the evenings and we film for a couple hours, and it ends up taking a couple days.
Yeah.
I will say that I'm super excited. We did shoot, we might have mentioned this last week, but we shot the intro to the Smithy build video. So we'll be working on that off and on. And I just got online. I got a post vice from a place up in PA through eBay. So I'll be driving up Saturday morning to pick that up. So I'm really excited to be able to put that into the Smithy and have a vice. I've been thinking, like, I need a vice. You know, I need something out in the Smithy. I'll need a vice out there so I can hold stuff and bend things and twist steel and all. And so I just got a pretty good deal on a post vice. So
nice.
We'll have that.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, that's
excited.
I mean, we'll see how much we can do. We kind of need light. Well, not really, I guess. Once you get the Smithy, well, the main building of it, you'll have to do probably on a weekend where we can get help anyway.
Right. Yeah, put everything up. Right.
But touch-up stuff we can do at night with a couple floodlights and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I think you know, a couple weekends and we'll have it up. And now that it's kind of starting to – the snow is melting, we can get in there and actually work on some stuff and start making some progress.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Cool. All right. Well – We do want to do some recommendations, so we're gonna do a bunch of recommendations this week instead of just doing one each. I just started making a list of just things I love in general, and things that you guys might like, and things that you know might also shed some light on me and Devin as makers and you know and creative people. So.
Yeah, Oh, I did say we wanted to put out some positivity. It didn't start that way, but we'll change the path, and hopefully we can do some quick fire recommendations.
Yeah.
Because I got the old baby in the other room. She's sleeping now, but I saw her look at the camera quickly. Uh-oh. You see her eyes. They glow, you know, with the...
Yeah,
it's kind of creepy. Like, how does she know?
She heard me talking about her. I hear you. Yeah, how does she know where the camera is looking?
I know, you little freak. Okay.
All right, well, the first one that I want to recommend is actually a video that I found today when I was teaching today. I found this really awesome video on YouTube. I can't remember where it came from specifically, like what channel it was on, but it's like a half an hour documentary called The Artist Family. And it's about the Liu family. It's the art of the Liu family. And the mother and father were kind of 60s hippies, and they had kids, and then their kids had kids, and they've all kind of just have kept creating art. I think the dad and maybe the son both were tattoo artists, and then they're like uncles and nephews and nieces and daughters and children. Like, they're all artists. They all just make art. So the documentary is about them preparing to do this show where they have like 300 pieces of artwork, all flat, all like 2D in a room in one main big gallery. And that's just like salon style, which means there's just tons of artwork. They're not evenly spaced out one piece at a time. They're all one above the other one, you know, like just a bunch of images on the wall all the way around this whole space. So 333 images inside the space. And then they never showed it in the documentary, but they talk about, they had an additional space that had 500 drawings, like sketches and drawings from anyone, from all of them. And they were going to do it on the floor under glass. So you like walk along the top of it. And it's like a river of drawings and sketches. Ooh. I never showed it though, so I don't know if it ever happened, but they talked about it. I was like, that's so cool.
Was there one family member that just wasn't that great?
I mean, you know, like it was the...
Hey, we'll put yours under the floor, honey. They'll see it. People aren't walking on my art, Mom, okay?
They were, well, it was like definitely, you know, they're all hippies. There's one like uncle, he like talks about he had this painting of this monkey face coming out of just a wall full of cannabis leaves. Like the entire thing was just made out of marijuana leaves. And he was like, I love this leaf. I have this communication with this leaf and this plant, this cannabis, you know, like
that you do.
This was so funny.
And if you turn on the black light, it all glows. It's made out of felt.
That's kind of what it felt like. The whole show was like this, but it was kind of cute. There was like, the youngest like grandchildren, whatever, were there maybe in, you know, 9, 10, something like that. And one girl's talking about her. She's like, you know, I did mine and blah, blah, blah. It's like a drawing of my dad. And it's like a kid's drawing of her dad, you know, they all just love art, you know, like positive. And there's a ton of good stuff though. There's like a lot of good, and there were, you know, different, like some painters, some drawers. There's this whole one part where the mom is talking, the like grandmother mom, she's talking about her husband who's passed away, but so he wasn't in the video, but, he did three color paintings, maybe 22 by 30. And each one was the title of each one was the name of the drug that he was on when he did it. So there was like LSD, mescaline, and speed. Like they were the three things. So it was like the whole point was like, I'm going to do this drug and I'm going to create an artwork. And I want to do it for each of these three drugs and see how they affect my creativity as I'm doing it. It's like pretty awesome. So. And he was actually the stepson of a pretty famous painter called Tengele, who I knew about. So that was kind of cool.
Like Hunter S. Thompson style.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool documentary. That was a long first recommendation.
Sorry. I know
you have
like
time for one and a half more. I'll do two tech ones real quick.
All right.
The DJI Mavic Mini, which we've used before in videos. Great drone. I just love it. It's dirt cheap. It's comparatively to the rest of them. I think it's $400, but you know, 10 years ago would have been like, you know, I don't know, thousands of dollars.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
It doesn't have 4K. So I don't know. Maybe we'll have to upgrade eventually. It has like a halfway between. It's got like 2.7K. So I guess people wouldn't really notice on YouTube, I don't think. So we could still use that.
Yeah, just, and obviously just, the shot's different. You know, they don't understand, okay, this is a drone shot, right? Yeah. It's going to look a little different.
It's just, it's so much fun just to take it straight up as high as you want and, you know, as high as you can get away with legally. I won't say how high I go, but I can see some things. And it's just so cool. Love it. And then the, which we have a friend of yours who does a lot of VR stuff, and I have an Oculus Quest 2 VR headset, and it's a standalone headset that you can put in any room, draw a boundary in any room, and then, you know, dive into it. And it's so cool. Anyone who tries it, it's blown. You've tried it.
Right.
You know,
yeah, so awesome.
It's really cool. And they've been doing tested. It has been doing these, VR videos. Mm-hmm. And, like he's making the Raptor costume right now, and they did a whole VR video of him walking around with a Raptor and skinning it. And they did someone from Weta Workshop, the Weta's the team that did Lord of the Rings, and they do all those special effects things.
Right.
But one of their artists does miniatures and like game boards, you know, big D&D, whatever, role-playing game boards. Which I guess wouldn't be Dungeons and Dragons. It'd be anything with miniatures, but
right.
They like, you know, they put the camera low in the miniature, you know? So you're like, you feel like you're in it. You're like looking around and there's like this forest that they've built, even though it's just tiny miniatures. And there's like Adam Savage standing over you looking like a giant, like placing things, you know?
that's sweet.
So cool. But those are my two tech recommendations.
Nice. Those are awesome. Well, I have some knife maker recommendations. I just put a list of knife makers that I really like, and people that you can find. I think all of these people you can find on on Instagram. But I have let's see, AA Forge, who we had on, Jewel Knives, Ruslan, Ruslan knife, Wanta Forge. And I don't know. I haven't seen Wanta Forge post anything in almost a year, maybe even more. So I don't know what happened to Wanta Forge, but I reached out to him to see if he wanted to be on the podcast, and I haven't heard anything, and I haven't seen any posts from him, so I don't know what's going on, but that's a shame, because he made really cool knives.
You don't exist if you're not on social media.
I know, I'm like, I don't know what happened to him.
What are you doing, just making things for yourself?
And I tried to go to his website, and it was like some other, it was a different website, too. I was like, oh no, what happened? Oh, that's so weird. Jonathan Deering, another knife maker who I love, Jonathan Deering. My fun story about him is that the first Wrangler Star video that I ever saw, I saw probably 2 years or so before I even started watching any Wrangler Star. And Wrangler Star is on my list too, because I love Wrangler Star videos. I love following along with his family and everything they're doing. Mm-hmm. But he did an unboxing of a Jonathan Deering knife that he had ordered from Jonathan Deering and had given him some specifics about what he wanted. And then, so Jonathan made that knife for him. And so the unboxing is just the camera from above. So it's just his hands. You don't actually ever see him, but it's just him opening the knife and the close-ups and looking at how nice it was made. And that was the first time I saw Jonathan Deering and the first time I saw Wrangler Star. It wasn't until a few years later that I put the two together that I was like, wait, this is after watching Wrangler Star for a while. I was like, I came across the video and I'm like, holy crap, this was a Wrangler Star video. That's so funny. But who else? Let's see. I have Gallardo knives, Jack Dusty knives. I have a couple more. Let's see. Maybe that's all for now. RPM Neil Kamimura. He makes some awesome knives. I have more, but... But yeah, there's a bunch. You guys can check them out. I will say that we're not going to do, obviously, any of these recommendations in the show notes. So if you're interested, you just got to go back and listen again. Find them.
I won't go into it. There's a game I play at certain places or certain sports team crews. And I have to come up with categories. And everyone gets they get to pick something randomly. And then we play a little game with it to kill the time during long baseball games. But
okay.
I was looking through my old list because I'll write them down. I'd write them down before the game in the press lounge. And I came up, I think my category was perfect movies.
Nice.
And this, I think this is my, 8 perfect movies. There's a, you know, a lineup of 9 people, right? Or no, so I got 9 perfect movies for 9 batters in a baseball team.
So you have these right now?
Yeah, this was my list at time. May 23rd, 2017, I wrote this list.
Okay.
Jurassic Park, perfect movie. There Will Be Blood, perfect movie.
Nice.
Toy Story, perfect movie. It's a Wonderful Life, perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Braveheart, perfect.
Yeah.
Fargo, perfect. Kill Bill, perfect action film. Full Metal Jacket, perfect. So Kubrick, War, and then the new addition to that at the time was The Truman Show that I had rewatched. And it's, so I guess that's my main, obviously these are all blockbusters that everyone knows, so it's not really a recommendation. I just thought it was a funny list that I thought, I mean, I still think those are like ones that you're kind of in awe about. You can't really pick flaws. There's not like one bad line. Like, it's so well done. It's like when that much stuff comes together perfectly, the right actors, the right, like everything works.
Yeah.
I think those are the movies. But The Truman Show, what a great...
Yeah, what a great movie.
At the time, people weren't into it because Jim Carrey's was wacky, right? It was Ace Ventura and...
Yeah, right. It wasn't his...
And The Mask. And yeah, so... But you go back and it's so cool the way they shoot it and how like... I don't know if it's relevant to now. Like, people obsessing over someone else's life.
Yeah.
And the whole world's watching this guy and all the little cool angles where they hide stuff and all the actors, you know, they're doing the sponsorships product the whole time.
Yeah.
And he's just like, who are you talking to?
No one.
She's like, right, she's starting to panic, you know?
Yeah, she's like yelling. He's like, who did you just yell to?
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. it's sad, but then it'll be funny and lighthearted. It's just... amazing, you know, in the scene, one of the first things he walks out, that light falls from the sky, you know, and he's just like, what? And then the next day they come up in the newspaper, they write something like aircraft carrier lost a light last night, you know,
over blah, blah, blahville.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so good.
Yeah. That's a good one. What's another, Back to the Future. I've heard a lot of people talk about that being a perfect movie.
Mm.
And then obviously, Adam Savage loves, Blade Runner.
See, that wouldn't be on my list.
All right.
I thought it's a bit too slow.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, everyone. Yeah, and, you know, also, taste, I'm not into the noir thing, the film noir.
Yeah, right.
That, like, black and white kind of, hey, see, like, the original kind of detective thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Never interested me. So maybe that's just part of it. It's not in my taste. I like it, but I wouldn't put it on my list, personally.
Yeah. Yeah, movies that fit into that, or at least ones that stick with me that I've always like loved that are the best are like E.T., like the kids movies like E.T., The Goonies, what's the other one I'm trying to think of? I can't remember off the top of my head. But there's the newer one, the Super 8, which I really like. Super 8, I thought that was really good.
Right, which is a copy of those films.
The modern day, right, exactly, which is the same thing that like... what is it? The new show. It's on like the third season now of
Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, yeah. It's got that.
Yeah,
that
and
same,
hey,
just like that.
There's
feel
nothing
of being
wrong with a
teenagers.
Copy if it's done well. I mean, that's that's Kill Bill, right? That's
right,
a copy
yep.
of Kung Fu movies, but done so well that it's just so what?
Yeah, right.
It's like Stevie Ray Vaughan playing blues music. Yeah, maybe it's a copy of blues music, but. He
but
does it better
so
than
well.
Anyone else. So
yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, whatever.
Nice.
Yeah, that's some
nice
recommendations.
Let's see. I have I have a couple YouTube channels that I can recommend.
Actually, hang on one sec.
Go
real
ahead.
Quick. I wanted to make one more point I just thought of. There's some older movies and things like Blade Runner or some art movies that I appreciate in concept and I'll watch once.
Right.
But it wouldn't make my perfect list.
Right.
Cause they're tough to get through. I was thinking what the equivalent to the art world is maybe certain types of modern art that you can appreciate as a concept.
Right. Right. Like it has its place.
You could go to MoMA or even the big, you know, like a Pollock. You could maybe a lot of people don't, but you can go. I appreciate it as a concept, as a thing, but it's not my favorite. I'm not going to go crazy about it. Right. That's kind of how the art films are for me. Like,
right.
I appreciate they're there and they're interesting to watch, and I see they're going for different things, but I don't know. I like big budget done like as well as it can be done.
Right.
When there's, you know, there's like 20 departments who are the best at what they do.
Yeah.
And you know, just so many people went into something. That's what I like.
That being said, though, one of my favorite movies ever, it was a super low budget movie. That's the movie Once, and that was, you know, it's like handheld and like because that the main actors hit it really well with the way they're acting together.
Yeah,
it feels really natural. It's this, you get the suspense build up, and it's kind of a musical movie where it's all about them creating music together, and then there's this like build up of maybe there'll be a relationship between the two of them. You're not sure if it's going to happen, and there's a dynamism to that whole thing that's building up to this like end of it. But you know, it didn't ever feel like a low budget movie, although you could tell it was handheld and it wasn't like the cleanest, but everything worked really well. There are those exceptions, yeah.
And that actually might be in the perfect movie list just because the music's so good and
exactly.
And what it was trying to... And that's not a bore, though. That's not slow at all. It is just so well done.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, that... Glenn Hansard, I think is his name. He... Yep. at the time when I was going to film school, that film had just... was coming out.
All right.
And they were having a discussion, and I just totally blew it off. Because they'd have them every other week or something. But it would be
artists.
These small movies that... I was like, yeah, you know, I had other things. I was doing my own films at the time, but if I would have known it was him and that movie that I ended up loving, I was so pissed that I could have sat there, watched a screening, and then asked him questions. But I did get to meet him later on because he took some film classes at the same time I did, but they were just like short, short little. Yeah. He took some like week or two intensive classes,
right? Yeah,
because I think he was finding all of a sudden he was got an Oscar or whatever for it.
Yeah.
And he had fallen that's into this film right. world and probably didn't know anything about it.
All right.
So he came to the school I was at and wanted to do some quick, just down and dirty learning about it. And he was nice, but
yeah. Yeah, I like that when I, you know, watched a little bit of the outtakes and stuff or whatever, not the outtakes, but the behind the scenes. I think the director was writing the story and he actually reached out to Glenn to write the music for it. But just originally just the music. It wasn't originally his intention to have him act. But then as he like wrote the music and he was trying to get other people to like sing it, and then it just came up and got some conversation or whatever. It's like, well, what if you do it, you know?
Right.
Like, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, oh, it's so
good. And then it's so good. You know, the two of them, him and whatever, Ilya Glover, whatever, I forget her name, but
yeah. It's
well, let's see, I have some artists, so I want to do some recommendations of artists just because these are people who have influenced me and my artwork over the years. I love lots of different type of art, and all my inspiration, things I do, comes from everywhere. I think like most people, your entire life feeds your creative process. Everything around you goes into what you do. But some of the ones that really, kind of stand out to me for these recommendations Joan Mitchell, who's an abstract expressionist, and Willem de Kooning, both abstract expressionists, but like really great way to use paint, which I've always loved. Anselm Kiefer is a landscape painter, but he does these really big kind of abstract, crazy, tons of texture. I think I've always been drawn to texture in artwork. Wolf Kahn was a big influence of mine. He's another landscape painter. I had a class, intro to painting class when I was in college, and his work really spoke to me about like creating large areas of color and big bold movements and making very like a bold gesture in a painting that could stand alone. So that was a big one. Mm. Wolf Kahn. Peter Doig is another really fun, more, you know, a more modern landscape painter still alive. Ewan Ugalo is a figurative painter who I love, the way he uses paint. Again, I think I really now, like, the more I think of these people, it's really about how they use the material and how it, that we can see it. So I think that's really what draws me. But like even older painters like Vuillard and Bonnard and Turner and Wyeth and Corot and Monet, all these people who were like really gestural painters, people who you could see the paint, you could see the movement. It wasn't just about the technique, but it was about an experience. And then someone like John Singer Sargent, who is just an amazing portrait painter and figurative painter. And again, his just, I feel like he almost had the best painter hand of all time, just this a quick few brush strokes and he could do like a perfect hand or a chandelier or the lace on a woman's dress. It's just amazing. Almost like almost too easy for him. Like, this is too easy. He's just like the best of all time and just paint these beautiful portraits for people and make tons of money. And
the best make it look easy, right?
And they do. And I have more. I have Antonio Lopez Garcia. Lots and lots. I have lots. I could go through artists all day. Some of my very early, I loved like Brahm and Frank Frazetta, the illustrators, people who are doing these crazy illustrations and, you know, like, fantasy warriors and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then my last two, and these are ones that I actually came across more recently. So I actually started following one of these guys on Instagram, Carl Kapinski, who's an illustrator. He does these really cool fantasy illustrations, but very like gestural, like lots of sketchy lines, lots of ink. Him and Kim Jung Ji, who's a Korean artist, again, like kind of fantasy, crazy drawings style, and Peter Han. Three of them. There's a real. All three of them have really awesome videos and documentaries on a really cool drawing channel. If you guys are into drawing, check out the channel Provoke, Proko. It's a guy who does all sorts of like drawing lessons on YouTube, but he has these three guys, Carl Kapinski, Kim Jung-ji, and Peter Han, all on and like live working and showing how they work and talking about how they work as they go, which I just think is fascinating. Have someone like drawing and talking about what they're doing. I love it. So
nice.
Yeah. And my list goes on and on and on, but you know, we could be here all day.
Yeah. My final thing, my last, I guess, recommendation is the YouTube channel, Every Frame a Painting. If you want to go in depth, deep of, but not even really, filmmaking stuff. He's just so clear, and he hasn't, this channel hasn't posted anything for 4 years.
Oh man.
But his run of videos, really good. Such good explanations about certain things that you might have noticed, but the people that do it best, he explains it, why they do it in such a clear and obvious way. It makes it seem obvious. It's got a lot of views, like Jackie Chan, how to do action comedy.
Right.
And he goes through how good Jackie Chan is at comedy, but at action and comedy.
Right. Yeah.
Akira Kurosawa, composing movement.
Yeah.
Just great old Japanese film director. I mean, everyone copies him. If it's a samurai film, it's a Kurosawa like copy because, like, the, for example, Mandalorian.
Yeah.
When they went into that town, when you saw the girl with the two lightsabers, that episode where we meet her.
Yep.
And they go into that town, there's that fight, and there's all that, like, it turns into a samurai film. It's a straight copy of Akira Kurosawa, but done really poorly, actually. Like one of the key things about Kurosawa are long takes, letting things breathe, but also letting the movement, but they just took things like the movement in the background, like a lot of things, like someone walking slowly straight at you, a samurai, and like windy, super windy in the back and everyone running around, but him coming slowly at you. Like they did that.
Right.
But then when it came to the action scene, there were like 1,000 cuts.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It was kind of a poorly done action scene. So that was kind of annoying.
That's funny, too. I mean, because all those directors who worked on Mandalorian all love all that stuff, and they know the references.
Yeah. You
know, it's not like they accidentally, you know, copied a Kurosawa. Like, that was very much on purpose. So.
Yeah, no. It had, I mean, that's... it's current. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no question about what it is. Right. But then they do it poorly, which was kind of a, I was kind of pumped for it. I was like, oh, they're doing like the samurai part. Like, cool.
Yeah.
And that was kind of poorly done. And then he has other ones. The Coen brothers shot, reverse shot. He talks about how they do their, how their close-ups and their dialogue so interesting, and how they only use these wide angle shots real close to an actor. Mm-hmm. They never do the standard shoulder over the shoulder kind of thing that you normally would see. They get right up in people's grill, and it's I never noticed it until he mentioned it. I was like, "You're right, they do," and it's so effective. But they're also brilliant writers, so I feel like you could shoot their stuff anyway, and it would be great. But that's it for recommendations for me.
Yeah, and I'll follow that up with just one more, only because it relates to that. Is the podcast still untitled, the Adam Savage Project? They do a really awesome podcast, but they do a lot of kind of spoiler episodes, which go in depth and behind the scenes, like with all sorts of cool shows and movies, and they do a bunch of stuff on The Mandalorian too, which is why I thought about it. And that was actually on my list as a recommendation. So
well, they are no longer
at all.
Mm-mm. Or I mean, they have. There's another version that Norm Savage and those guys do without Adam now.
Oh, really?
But like the still untitled, they just stopped that like 2 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they had taken a break for a while, and they came back and they did some more.
Yeah, they're done. They're done now, or at least with Adam Savage.
Right.
Huh. I mean, still a lot of good shows on there, but
yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, that was such a good one. Just hearing them just geek out about all that stuff was just really, it's fun to listen to. So if you're interested in any of those, specifically movies, they do a really awesome job talking about movies and stuff and going in behind the scenes and, you know, relating it back to all the inspiration and stuff, which is why I think that's a great way to end this episode on people who love the craftsmanship and the creativity and all the work that goes into creating a content for people. And that's what we do, and that's what we love. Thanks, guys, so much for listening. This has been it's been a fun one, and like I said, I have a long list. I wish there was a better way for us to communicate with our listeners, because I would always say, like, let me know what you want to hear. Like, if you want to hear more like this, let me know. And you guys can do that. You can put in comments and, you know, in I think iTunes. And there's different places where you can comment and rate the show, but...
Yeah, I guess it would have to be our email. The art of craftsmanship at @gmail.com. Maybe we should get a Discord going. A lot of people do that. People used to do it for video games. Now they do it for everything. Like, I think Tested has a Discord.
Right.
Where it's just a room where people can post just anything. Links. Okay. They can chat. Maybe we get that going. Then people can post projects.
Yeah.
Ask questions on it.
Recommend stuff for the podcast, recommend stuff for the channel. That would be good. I like that. And then we could, you know, be like, hey, check this out. Listen to us here. So if you guys want to do that, if you want to hear that, you know, send us a DM. You can DM me at The Art of Craftsmanship on Instagram, as well as you can DM Devin at his Instagram, which is at The Art of Camera Guy. And you guys can find us on YouTube, The Art of Craftsmanship, and then on the Makery Network, which there may be some changes in the Makery Network, but you'll still be able to find us on the Makery Network. We're still going to be putting out episodes every week. Most likely we'll just keep it on Friday because that's what we're doing, but there might be a little bit of changes, but hopefully that won't affect anyone's listening. And you can always, if you want to see better content and help us buy better things and be able to spend more time on our videos, you can go over and you can support us on Patreon. That's it. Devin, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. And it seems like we made it okay without waking the baby too much. And
yeah, I think we're okay.
Cool. All right, brother. Well, everybody, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next time.